change the world with my own two hands, make it a better place with my own two hands, make it a kinder place with my own two hands, with my own, with my own two hands. I can make peace on earth with my own two hands. I can clean up the earth with my own two hands. I can reach out to you with my own two hands, with my own, with my own two hands, with my own, with my own two hands. I'm gonna make it a brighter place with my own two hands. I'm gonna make it a safer place with my own two hands. I'm gonna help the human race with my own two hands, with my own, with my own two hands, with my own, with my own two hands. I can hold you in my own two hands, and I can comfort you with my own two hands. But you got to use your own two hands, use your own, use your own two hands, use your own, use your own two hands. And with our own, with our own two hands, with our own,
thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lehrman. Do guns reduce crime? What are the causes of violent crime? Many factors have been considered as the cause of violent crime. Does alcohol or drug abuse, poverty, lead exposure among children, child abuse, lack of love, poor judgment, violence in the media, poor parenting skills, or guns affect crime? Coming up next, six people debate if guns reduce crime.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating brought to America's shores. I'm John Donvan. On this stage tonight as your host and, more importantly, your moderator for another in our series of smart and sparkling debates on topics that matter. The motion before us is guns reduce crime, which may sound counterintuitive, but that actually depends on how this debate goes, and it may actually sound intuitive, again, depending on how the debate goes. We are joined also on this stage by two teams of debaters of three members each of them superbly qualified to be taking part in this discussion. You are also a part of the evening in that this is a contest. It is a contest of persuasion. These debaters are here to influence your views, to try to change your minds, in fact, if you disagree with their position. We are going to poll you twice during the evening, once in a moment and once close to the end of the debate, in order to see where you stand on this motion that guns reduce crimes. Each of the debaters will have opening statements. After the opening round, our second round will be a head-to-head debate in which the debaters will debate among themselves. And then at the end of the debate, once again, we will poll you to see where we stand on the numbers. There will be a two-minute summary statement by each debater to wrap up the event, and at that point, we will announce the winners based on your judgment. So with that said, let the debate begin. Only rarely does a man of ideas witness in his own lifetime the opportunity to actually see one of his ideas change history. For a scholar who wrote a controversial book in the 1990s arguing that where there is more gun ownership, there is actually less crime, that history-making experience took place. Legislatures across the country took hold of the ideas in that book and passed laws allowing for the carrying of concealed weapons. That, indeed, was history-making. The author of that idea and of the book that contained those ideas is our first debater tonight, speaking for the motion, Guns Reduce Crime, John Lott.
Guns cause bad things to happen, and guns make it easier for bad things to happen. But guns also make it easier for people to protect themselves and prevent bad things from happening. Guns make it easier for you to harm somebody, but guns also make it easier for you to deter criminals from attacking to begin with and turn out to be the most effective way for somebody to go and defend themselves when they're having to face a criminal by themselves. It'd be great if police were there all the time. My research finds that police are probably the single most important factor for reducing crime. But I think one thing the police understand themselves is they virtually always arrive on the crime scene after the crimes occurred. Even if they're able to call 911, you know, fast response times are measured in 8 or 9 or 10 minutes. And it can be a lifetime for many people. A lot of people have a pretty good idea of the bad things that happen with guns. But you also have, if you look at surveys done by the Justice Department, you'll find maybe about 450,000 crimes are committed each year with guns. By contrast, you have similar types of surveys that indicate that people use guns defensively about 2 million times a year. So about 4 to 5 times more frequently people use guns to stop crime than guns are used in the commission of crime. We all want to try to take guns away from criminals. I mean, one obvious thing that's been tried many times is to go and have gun bans. The problem is that when you go and pass something like that, the question you have to ask yourself many times is who's most likely to obey the rule. If it turns out that it's the most law-abiding citizens who obey the rule and turn in their guns relative to criminals, you can actually increase in violent crime. In Washington, D.C., is one important example of that. In 1976, September 76, D.C. passed a ban banning handguns. It didn't go into effect until February 77. But only once after 76 was D.C.'s murder rate as low as it was in 76. Only twice in 2 years after that was D.C.'s robbery rate as low as it was in 76. It's not just D.C., though. In Chicago, Chicago's murder and robbery rates were falling prior to the 1982 ban, and they rose afterwards. They rose relative to other cities. But it's just not in the United States. Worldwide, time after time, and it'd be interesting to have people try to show an example where this isn't true, when you pass bans, you see increases in violent crime rates. Now, one thing people often do is they look across countries, and they say, well, look, England has a relatively low gun ownership rate, has a relatively high murder rate, even if their violent crime rate is twice what we are in the United States, and they may point to Japan or Germany or other countries, and they say the United States has more guns, more violent crime. But the thing they have to take into account is these other countries had much, much lower violent crime rates prior to bans going into effect. And what you see time after time, when these bans go into effect, either drop, violent crime rates no longer drop, or they begin to start to go up, as you've seen in England and other countries.
Thank you, John Lott. One of the safest major cities in the United States is Seattle, thanks in great measure to the work done by its police force under the leadership of a chief who has led the city to a 40-year low in violence. That said, problems persist there as everywhere else, especially among young offenders, a point brought home to the chief of police in Seattle after, in an anecdote he shared with us, he was doing some after Christmas Day shopping at a mall, and when he returned to his car, it had been broken into, and the one item stolen from his car was his gun. It's firsthand experience, and certainly of everyone on our panel, no one has actual more firsthand experience dealing with guns and crime than the Chief of Police of Seattle, Gil Kerlikowske.
Thank you, John. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you. I was worried that they wouldn't bring that story out, and I wanted to make sure that I did full disclosure. But the right to own and possess a gun in this country isn't a debatable issue, and it's not the topic. Reasonableness, though, and common sense do come into play. So you're going to hear from the other side about the deterrence effect, and in fact, John already brought a little bit about that up. More people carrying more guns will deter criminals. In other words, the criminals will think twice before confronting a potential victim. I wish criminals were that smart. Since we have almost in the neighborhood of 240 million guns in the United States, I would think that these criminals would already get the message that there are a lot of guns out there, and that if deterrence was in fact carried through, that we would have seen it by now, but we haven't. The other side of this coin is, will more armed citizens have an opposite effect on criminals? In other words, are the criminals going to now arm themselves, thinking that more and more and more people are carrying guns? Well, the union that represents the British Bobbies, who have been unarmed since Sir Robert Peel founded them, their union went forward and said, look, we do not want to be armed as Bobbies in the UK. Now, this was during a time of significant increases in crime, increases in knife crime, which is still going on. But they ask not to be armed. Now, there are some specialized units, certainly, but for the vast majority of the Bobbies in all of the UK, they are not armed, and they don't want to be because, one, they think it will only increase assaults on themselves, and that it will be a tit-for-tat or a proliferation of guns in the UK, which, like rabies, they have very few of. Who is carrying a gun now in this country, in the United States? Well, of course, law enforcement officers, state, federal, local. Security guards across all walks of life, from banks to armored car services, literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people that are already carrying guns. And then there's a whole nother group of people, and those are the people that are able to go into their states and ask for a concealed firearms permit. There is a background check. It depends on the state on what's done. But essentially, they say, look, I sell jewelry, or I have a business that's been robbed, or, you know what, I want to be able to carry a gun, like in Florida. Let me close with this. When I was a young officer working the street in St. Petersburg, retired people, a young woman, 15 years old, intoxicated, beating and beating and beating on the front door of an elderly couple who had no phone. He turned to the thing that he felt could protect him the most, even though she was unable, of course, to get in, and she was just really an intoxicated kid who beating on the front door. He fired through the door and struck her.
Thank you, Gil Kerlikowske, arguing against the motion.
Hear great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
She must call her own. They treat her like a flower pot for a seed he has sown. The woman makes a baby, feeds him till he's grown. Those who feed on flesh and blood break his spirit down. Fill his brains with poison, teach him left and right. How to hate his brother, they teach him black and white. The woman makes a baby, there's a big strong son. Those who feed on soldier boys, take him for the gun. The woman has a body that she must call her own. They treat her like a flower pot for a seed that he has sown. Her spirit is free, free to question. A woman's body is her own, consider a boy. They subjugate his senses, mystify his mind. He forgets where he came from, he's deaf and dumb and blind. They'll cage him in the factory, tie down his desire. Milk his body of his strength to stoke another fire. Turn him loose in the bull ring to fight with tooth and claw. Kick his balls of punishment if he questions what it's for. Tell him he's got freedom as he struggles on the leash. Fill his mouth with violence, tell him it's free speech. Woman has a body that she must call her own. The creature like a flower pot for a seed that he has sown. Your spirit is free to take or refuse. A woman's body is her own, a woman's right to choose. Power as he claws his way above. Over those who fall behind, over those who need his love, over those who feed his body, those who ease his pain, those who bear his children and those who lose the game. He who was a baby but now is big and grown will crush his lover's body, tie her spirit down, cage her in a kitchen so he knows she'll be there when he comes home bruised and bleeding for her tender care. Woman has a body that she must call her own. The treasure like a flower pot for a seed that he has sown. The spirit is free, choice is action. A woman's body is her own. Abortion is an option. The woman makes a baby, a daughter strong and straight. Those who feed on flesh and blood can hardly bear the weight. They teach her she's a vessel for him to enter in. And those whose appetite she feeds tell her she's sin. If cripple her with corsets, things would make her weak. Crucify her instead, smear paint on her cheek. Turn her loose in the market to buy and be sold. She's an empty vessel for promises of gold. The woman has a body that she must call her own. They treat her like a flower pot for seed that he has sown. The spirit is free, choice is her action. A woman's body is her own. Abortion must be an option. They buy her for a nursery where a baby will grow. Treat her like a flower pot for a seed he has sown. Cage her in a doll's house, tie down her desire. Cheat her spirit of its strength, stoke another fire. If she talks of freedom, how it all began, those who know will tell her that she should have been a man. They deny her body, they deny her mind. She forgets where she came from, she's deaf and dumb and blind. A woman has a body see that she must hold her own, but the teacher like a flower pot proceed that he has sown. Your spirit is free, consider abortion. A woman's body is her own, abortion is an option. Protection, shelter from the cold, lust of a factory, promise of gold. She that makes a baby is a woman full grown. No priest take her mind, no man take control. Don't feed the factory, don't feed the gun. Don't feed the church, your baby's your own. Human spirit is free, choice is woman's fight. A woman's body is her own, abortion is her right. The woman has a body that she must call her own. The teacher like a flower pot proceed that he has sown. Her spirit is free, freedom's her fight. A woman's body is her own, abortion is her right.
And now, back to Do Guns Reduce Crime?
As a lawyer representing the National Rifle Association, Stephen Halbrook has gone 3-for-3 before the Supreme Court in arguing firearms cases on behalf of the NRA. He is on our stage tonight to argue in this debate for the motion, Guns Reduce Crime. Stephen?
It's a real pleasure to be here. What I think we're advocating tonight, those of us on the side of the proposition, is that you should have freedom of choice to protect yourself if you decide to do that. One of the questions that was asked recently in the U.S. Supreme Court, the District of Columbia was trying to defend its handgun ban, and they said that it's okay to ban handguns and that all guns should have trigger locks and be disassembled and never loaded. And one of the Supreme Court justices asked the question, well, what if you hear the door crash in and you're fumbling for your reading glasses and trying to turn on the lamp and your hands are trembling? Maybe it would be a good idea to have a gun available if something like that happened. So the question is not whether everybody should have a gun, but the question is, should you have the ability to exercise that freedom of choice if you are a responsible citizen and that's your decision to do so? I'd like to use a couple of maybe legal cases to illustrate the point. You've heard D.C. became the murder capital of the United States after it enacted a handgun ban. There's no duty of the police to protect you. It's not just impossible for them to do so. It's not a legal duty. Right before the handgun ban in D.C. was enacted, there were three women who were in a boarding house, and they were broken into. And there was two individuals who, over a period of many, many hours, raped and robbed and otherwise assaulted them. They called 911 several times, and the police would come knock on the door, and nobody would respond. So this nightmare finally ended, and so they sued the D.C. government, and the courts ruled that there's no duty of government to protect any individual person. They have a duty to society at large, which is just kind of a useless concept. So there's no duty to protect you, and then the question becomes, well, maybe you would like to protect yourself. Maybe you'd like to at least have the legal right to do that, and that's what the Second Amendment is partly intended to guarantee. That's what the Supreme Court just held in D.C. versus Heller. That we do have an individual right to keep and bear arms, and it's a right. It's not something you have to do. It's not a duty, but it's something that you can do.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores. I'm John Donvan of ABC News. And this is Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating brought to American shores. We have six panelists on the stage, 3 for and 3 against the motion, Guns Reduce Crime. We are halfway through our opening statements, and now let's let the debate continue. We are all wise enough in the ways of the world to know that the statement, statistics never lie, is a lie. The point being that honest scholars can look at the same numbers and disagree profoundly about what they mean. We heard from John Lott, whose specialty is looking at the statistics of gun crime. We are now going to be hearing from John Donahue, who is also a numbers man, but who looks at the numbers and comes up with dramatically different points of view on guns and crime. And through the academic journals, the two Johns have something of a feud going. But introducing you as our next speaker against the motion, Guns Reduce Crime, John Donahue.
Well, you're making a feud. I am a peaceful man, but let me just say that everything that you've heard from John in terms of the statistical claims are subject to serious challenge and refutation. Quickly on the D.C. Handgun ban issue, if you look at the numbers that John had put up, which was interesting, if he had actually showed you the number of murders in D.C., they had actually dropped. He showed you the rate. D.C. was depopulating tremendously in the 70s, and it was largely the flight of the affluent, so the group that had the lowest likelihood of engaging in crime. So crime was going to be, if you use the rates that John showed, it was going to be trending up because the people remaining in the city had a much higher risk of crime. If you went for a number of years, you'd see there was a huge run-up in crime in D.C., as there was in Chicago and Philadelphia and New York, for that matter. But it had nothing to do with the topic we're talking about. That was crack cocaine, which had a tremendous criminogenic influence on crime. The idea that John Lott, and you will hear Gary Kleck argue, that guns are being used constantly to thwart criminals by these gun-toting citizens is grotesquely misleading. John gave a number, two million. It's a complete fantasy. Now, John and I have debated on the issue of right-to-carry laws, laws that say citizens who have not yet been convicted of a felony or not yet been involuntarily committed to a mental hospital should be allowed to carry a gun wherever they want. John thinks this is a great idea, offers statistics to prove it. Let me just mention that in Texas, even if you have been committed to a mental hospital, if you can get a note from your doctor, they'll give you that concealed handgun permit. North Dakota really set a new low. They actually gave one of these permits to a blind permit holder. This is, to be frank, insanity. Now, I published a number of econometric studies, and virtually every top econometrician who has looked at this has sided with me and not with John Lott. The National Academy of Sciences convened a panel of talented experts who spent 2 years looking at John Lott's work. 15-1 in that panel of 16, they concluded that scientific evidence does not support the more guns, less crime proposition. The lone dissenter was someone who was not an econometrician, who admitted in his dissent that he wished he knew more econometrics, and who had previously testified as an expert witness on behalf of the execrable NRA. Thank you.
Thank you, John Donahue. When it comes to hot-button issues, we like to have easy pigeonholes to put people in, but our next speaker makes it difficult. A professor of criminology at Florida State, he is, a Democrat, a member of the ACLU, a member of Amnesty International. He describes himself as an environmental tree hugger. However, when it comes to this issue, this classic liberal is defying all expectations by arguing what is normally considered the conservative side. Gary Kleck, arguing for the motion that guns reduce crime.
The moral of that particular story is I didn't come to the pro side of this debate via my ideology. It's the most unnatural thing in the world from that standpoint. My way into this position is basically evidence-based. I'm boringly scholarly. Oddly enough, you sometimes what you can learn from a debate is by listening to the silences, paying attention to what people would be expected to talk about but don't. Strictly speaking, the other side actually hasn't addressed the issue of the effectiveness of defensive gun use. The reason is the evidence is unanimous. It's rare in criminological research for the findings to be unanimous on anything, but they're unanimous on this one. Defensive gun use is effective in the sense that crime victims who use guns during a crime are less likely to be injured or killed and less likely to lose property than crime victims who adopt any other kind of strategy, including non-resistance. And this is so despite the fact that usually when people try to use guns for self-protection, they're doing it under tougher circumstances. They do it not because they're quick on the trigger, but because they're kind of facing really desperate circumstances. They're likely to be outnumbered. They're likelier to be facing offenders with weapons, including guns, than other victims. They're more likely than other victims to have already been injured. And out of desperation, with all of these handicaps against them, then they use guns in an attempt to defend themselves, and from that point on, they are not hurt. There's good reason why the chief's police officers carry guns. They're effective for self-protection, but it doesn't require the unique training and experience of police officers for it to be effective. It's effective basically for everybody.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware.
think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street singing songs and a carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. We better stop.
And now for something completely different.